right, welcome back to Talking Taker. This is episode 5 of our journey, our exploration, digging up the dead man's career, going through his 27-year-long career, match by pay-per-view match, one by one, exploring the evolution of the greatest WWE performer creation of all time. My name is Alex Dorio, and I'm joined alongside by my co-host and tag team partner, Travis White. How you doing, friend?
I am doing excellent. How are you today?
Dude, I'm feeling nice and comfortable in my 24-year-old Jake the Snake Roberts t-shirt that I've got on right now. I'm feeling good.
Those of you listening, you cannot see it. It is phenomenal. It is a 1993, what does it say,
Cruel but fair tour.
Fair.
1993, tour. Oh. DDT. I'll post a picture of it on the Twitter page.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You have to.
It's so good. 24-year-old shirt. Fits like a glove.
Well, I got to tell my Jake the Snake Roberts story as we get into that. We're covering WrestleMania 8 tonight. Jake the Snake Roberts against The Undertaker. And so I got to tell a story behind this t-shirt real quick. I was 7 years old, I guess, and wrestling was my life at that time. Obsessed with everything, and my mom was taking me to the dentist in Augusta, Georgia. As we were driving to the dentist, we passed by Hooters, and on the billboard outside Hooters on Washington Road, right down the street from the Augusta National, if you're familiar with Augusta at all, it said Jake the Snake Roberts appearing this afternoon, 4 o'clock, something like that. And I could not believe my eyes. I could not believe Jake the Snake Roberts was going to be in Augusta. And so, like, I told my mom, like, I was in shock. And I was like, I think that thing said that Jake the Snake is going to be at Hooters this afternoon. And my mom, I'm sure, was rolling her eyes, just hated that.
She's like, oh, you're wondering at Hooters a little early. He's seven years old.
Exactly. So she took me to the dentist, and I kept bugging her about it. She said, okay, when we get done, we'll go over there and see what it is. So my mom took 7-year-old Alex to Hooters, and they said, yeah, Jake the Snake is going to be signing autographs here. So we went and got a table and ordered a Coca-Cola and waited for Jake the Snake to arrive, and he showed up. This was 1993, Jake, so who knows what he was on or what he was doing at this point in time, but I'm just awestruck of this. He sets up his little gimmick table inside Hooters. He's selling these t-shirts and selling Polaroids. So, of course, my mom, being awesome as she is, she buys me a t-shirt, it lets me take a Polaroid with Jake the Snake, and gets an autograph on a cocktail napkin, Jake the Snake, and he took the picture with me and autographed the Polaroid. He was as nice as could be. You know, he talked to me. There wasn't, I guess I was the first person there to see him. Who knows what business was like for him that day, like a weekday in Augusta, Georgia, selling gimmicks at Hooters. But he talked to me for like 10, 15 minutes. It was super nice. And I still have the t-shirt to this day.
And the memory. That's awesome.
Oh, and the memory. I actually got to meet Jake again 2 years ago during the promo tour for the Resurrection of Jake the Snake movie. They did a showing here in Atlanta, and Jake and DDP and Scott Hall were all there. So me and a few other friends, we took a picture with all of them and just got to see Jake for 30 seconds. But I told him the Hooters story. I said, I met you 20 years ago at you were signing autographs at a Hooters in Augusta, Georgia. And he said, yeah, that sounds about right. I believe it.
So, yeah, he probably didn't remember that day.
Yeah. I'm sure not. A lot of days he doesn't remember.
He wondered, he was like, man, this is a 7-year-old kid doing a Hooters.
He's probably trying to hit on my mom.
That's probably right. I'm sure he was. Sure, that's a cool story, man. That's a fantastic story. So,
first wrestler I ever met. Say what?
I forgot that about that story. I remember hearing that years ago, but I don't have quite as cool a Jake Snake story, but I do remember. I failed to mention this in our original podcast. We were talking about, you know, how we fell in love with wrestling and yeah. where it came from. And
yeah.
And I remember having a Jake the Snake toy. It wasn't the LJN. It was the Hasbro ones.
Mm-hmm.
Where you pull his arm back and his arm slingshot punches, or like springs out and punches you. And he had the
rubber. I had the same one.
Damien. And that was why I wanted. I wanted Damien the Snake. It was rubber. And I used it with all my G.I. Joes and Battle Beast and my Ninja Turtles and everything. And still have that toy. It's in my brother's house, actually. So hopefully his dog hasn't eaten it by now. He ate all our other toys. But hopefully his dog has not eaten Damien. So, but he was one of my guys, too. I love Jake Snake Roberts. Even when I wasn't watching wrestling, I loved the toy. He just enamored me. And so as we watch this match and are going to talk about it, it's really cool to see these two guys, icons. And,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
One's a Hall of Famer, one's a future Hall of Famer. You know, Undertaker's a for sure first ballot Hall of Famer whenever he feels like going in. I'm sure he just gets to tell Vince, hey, it's my year.
Right.
So, you know, just to see these guys clash back in 1992 is pretty cool, as we'll get into here. So
I had that same figure, and when he came out to the ring, you know, Jake always had the sack with the snake that you carry on his shoulder. So I remember I took like a crumpled up just envelope, like just a white envelope, and I would stuff the snake in there and I'd crumple it up. And that was my makeshift Jake the Snake sack for carrying that down to the ring.
So good.
But you're, I mean, that Jake the Snake is just one of those guys that just pops off the screen. Obviously, he's got a snake, and that's cool to kids.
Yeah.
But his personality.
For someone like me, I'm just a huge fan of reptiles. Anybody that knows me, those are my favorite things in the world, so. He just enamored me anyway. Mm-hmm. It's hard to cut you off, but yeah, I just had to say that. So
no, the snake was a huge part of it, but his personality as he was a babyface for a long time, but here in this match, it's the end of his WWF run and the end of his heel run, which I talked about on the last episode, was just epic. I mean, he was just on fire here, so slimy, so terrible and disgusting, and he cuts a great promo here on The Undertaker. I feel like, you know, people argue and say Ric Flair should have faced Hogan at this pay-per-view, but Hogan ended up facing Sid. Man, I would have loved to see Hogan against Jake the Snake, like Jake the Snake get a main event heel run. He would have been killer in that role, and it's a shame that his demons just caught up with him at this time.
Yeah, I agree. He would have been, that crowd would have been hot for him and all over for Hogan. It has been so good. So
yeah,
because you're right, he was just a despicable piece of trash, you know, from all this story. And this is where you know, last time we talked about with This Tuesday in Texas, Undertaker was still a heel at that point.
Yep.
But at this point he turns face I guess officially, he's getting crowd pops and they're popping for his moves and stuff. But in February, when he stopped Jake the Snake from hitting Miss Elizabeth with a chair, so as he's still feuding with Savage, Undertaker and Jake the Snake were kind of loosely aligned, you know, if you will. And he stops Jake from hitting her with a chair. So I guess the dead man has a heart. So, but this is the first. His first WrestleMania match that has a story, you know.
Right.
He just kind of got shoehorned into the title picture with Hogan. His match, his other Survivor Series debut was just his debut, and his match with Snuka at last year's WrestleMania was just kind of there. So this was his first real program.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, first one of any substance. And
yeah.
Like you said.
Who better to be with than Jake the Snake?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And like you said, you know, he'd been getting cheers for a long time, you know.
Yeah.
a lot of these, every match we've seen, really, he's getting cheered for. So, I mean, it really is kind of inevitable that that he would turn face and become a good guy and all that stuff. I don't know if they knew it would happen so soon, but it definitely felt inevitable.
I think it seems organic.
Yeah.
Just from when he lost to Hogan, you know, at lost the title, it seems like, you know, it was just, especially when Hogan hit him in the head with the belt, I mean, just going super heel on him. So, I mean, it just seems like the crowd was ready to cheer this guy, you know. So yeah, here we go. We have it. It's WrestleMania 8.
WrestleMania 8.
April 5th, 92 at the Hoosier Dome.
Really cool look in there for the Hoosier Dome. It looks kind of like, almost like a modern WrestleMania a lot more than some of the other ones have. Big crowd, big giant dome feeling in there.
A lot of floor space.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looks really similar to one of the more recent, WrestleManias. You're right. So I thought it was outside when I was watching. I was like, it's Hoosier Dome. I think it's not outside, but there's so much sunlight in there. But I don't know if that central time zone had something to do with it or if they started early. I have no idea what time the pay-per-view started, but you almost thought it was outside.
Yeah.
You just looked at it. It's so bright in there.
And he's the second match from the top, too. So pretty weird for Undertaker to be coming out that early. So I'm sure that had something to do with it.
Yeah. A little nugget here I have is that this is the last WrestleMania commentated by Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan. So after that, I think Gorilla stepped away and, didn't do that anymore. And I guess within the next year or two, Heenan goes to WCW. But but this is the last one. So this is, unfortunately for us, it's not, the pay-per-view match is not going to be quite as entertaining.
No, they won't be. They've been a great part of this run.
Yeah, but part of this runs of pay-per-views, we're part of the fun of doing this podcast is listening to Bobby and Gorilla go back and forth, and makes me sad to know that this is the last one we're going to hear of WrestleMania, at least. So.
Yeah. But they're great, as usual. Great tandem. Before the match, we get, like I said, that Jake does a promo, and we see clips of Jake the Snake on the funeral parlor with The Undertaker. Yes. After Undertaker had rescued Elizabeth, Jake joined him on the funeral parlor segment, and he...
Great set, again. Has all kinds of stuff. I mean, candelabras and the coffin.
It went all out.
The ferns, and I mean, Vince McMahon's putting money into this gimmick, it's awesome.
Jake slams The Undertaker's hand in The Undertaker's own casket, and then gives the DDT to Paul Bearer. Also, I don't think I've ever seen Paul Bearer take a bump. That's the first one he took a DDT on the floor. It was pretty vicious, and as Jake puts it, short ride, bad landing. Kicks the urn away. Man, he's
despicable.
Yeah. Yeah.
He really is. He takes a chair to Undertaker, too, I believe. He hits him. I don't think Undertaker sells him, but he
gives
him
a couple chair shots. And really, that's the story. Like, Jake the Snake has been just the worst person in the world, and the Undertaker is going to give him his comeuppance in this match and send him away for good. Huge pop when the gong hits as Undertaker comes out. Like you said, people were just ready for it.
Yeah. It was natural, And luckily, Vince McMahon listened to the crowd, I guess, and so he wasn't hesitant to turn him like sometimes they do nowadays. But,
that's a good point right there.
Immediately, the gong goes off, and the crowd just lights up. It is so cool. Because Jake came out first, and there was just booze everywhere, and he just, but this crowd just loves The Undertaker. It was so cool to see, how it's, like I said, he'd been getting a few cheers, but this place is 100%. It's not... 60-40, it's 100% Undertaker fans. It was really cool.
Yeah.
However, kids in the crowd still look a little scared, though.
They do.
Did you notice that? Yeah.
Yeah.
It showed close-ups. Kids still look a little nervous. And there's this one woman they kind of zoom in on, and she has just these bug eyes, about her, and she's kind of, enthralled with him. But she's still, she's a fan, so that was really cool to see.
And I think I had in here... somewhere, I think that they already had some merchandise out in the crowd. Somebody had like a foam urn or something out there, so they were already, merchandising Undertaker. But it's like a Pavlov's dog response with the gong. It's just a great thing that as soon as it hits, man, people get excited for it.
Still no lights down.
No, so don't have that part yet.
There, so we still, we keep beating that dead horse, but we're just interested to see when that's going to start. So I know I just made a note of that again. It hasn't quite started yet, so not here.
I like how Jake the Snake, you could see as Undertaker was coming out, he's just got like a little whiff of fear in
concern,
his face.
Yeah.
A little bit of concern. He's not like running scared, like, right. in the corner, which I think is great. I think I saw Roddy Piper talk about it one time in some interview or a documentary or something. They said as a heel, you don't want to just look totally scared of your right. opponent. You want to be you got to be real subtle and show you want to show like a little flinch or something, but then go back to being tough. Like, that's what the best heels do. Sorry, dog is chewing on squeaky toy.
Oh, that's the other co-host.
Yeah. But yeah, and Jake does a great job of just shows you just a little flinch, but then he goes yep. back to trying to be a tough guy.
That's funny. I wrote the same thing. I wrote Jake looks concerned. You know, he just you're not scared, like you said. You're just a little bit concerned about, oh crap, I got to go up against this guy.
Yeah, have I done?
Yeah, exactly. When so as the match starts, Jake lays his punches in and immediately knocks Taker over the top rope. But then he turns around to, like, you know, gloat, I guess, and Undertaker, you know, does the old classic leg trip and pulls him out, and
yeah.
the crowd pops huge.
Oh, they loved it.
Undertaker hasn't even bumped yet, and he's not doing it. He just trips Jake the Snake, but it's just the way that the crowd loves his character, and they pop huge. And did you notice that Heenan called him Lurch?
Yeah.
He said, that may be Lurch. He was like, he takes his vacations at whatever the Munster's address is, 1313 Mockingbird Lane or something, and he's like, that may be Lurch. Like, oh, I'm going to miss that.
Oh, yeah, that was classic. I wrote one, my favorite line they said was, seemingly a cold-blooded individual. Always that eerie smell of formaldehyde when you're around him. I thought that was your cologne. Will you stop? You buy that cheap stuff all the time so you get a free cold. I'll tell you, take it out of here in a minute. I'll ask you to leave. I'm Indiana's favorite Bobby. Oh.
He's so fast.
Oh, yeah.
He's so quick-witted. Oh,
they're great. So
good.
Yeah. I love that part where Taker pulled Jake out of the ring. Like you just said, it felt like a horror movie, and that's what yeah. Undertaker feels like. Is just he's stalking Jake the Snake, keeps coming after him, and like Jake, that's a great spot where he clotheslines Undertaker over the ropes, and Undertaker lands on his feet. He's yep. done that in almost every match, but it's always has. Cool.
And doesn't get old.
No. And he just...
the crowd loves it every time.
Yeah. He yanks Jake's feet out from under him and yanks him out of the ring like a horror villain. And that's what's really interesting and why Undertaker's so special is because he hasn't really changed anything that he's doing, but it all works perfectly good as a good guy.
Too. Yeah. And that's exactly my next point that I wrote down too. Other than them discussing what's in the urn again, we still don't quite know. We know there's ashes, like you pointed out last time, because Hulk Hogan throws him. But
right.
he does a blatant choke to Jake Roberts. So he doesn't even change up his offense. He's not abandoned all the stuff that made him a heel. You know, the choking. He still does chokes to Jake, even though he's a face now. So I wrote that he doesn't change his offense up much, like you just mentioned. He's still staying true to that character. There's just little nuances, you know, and depending on who he's in the ring with that mm-hmm. makes him a face. It's not really, you know, he's not suddenly kissing babies, you know, and crying over the championship and stuff like baby faces do. He's just still sticking to the guns, you know, and that's really cool that we both noticed that.
Yeah. It's like this horror movie series, like Friday the 13th or Halloween or something, where the first one, the bad guys, obviously the bad guy, Jason or Freddy or Michael Myers, but when you get 10 movies into the series, you end up just rooting for the bad guys
yeah.
to kill everybody. And it's yeah. kind of what the Undertaker's become here. Start off yeah. as the bad guy, but you just want to see him just because he's the coolest character. You want to exactly. see him destroy everybody. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I think there are three wrestling moves in this entire match. Two DDTs from Jake the Snake and one tombstone. And
yep.
literally everything else is just a bunch of chokes and punches, clotheslines. Jake does a knee lift. I don't know if that counts mm-hmm. as a wrestling move. Just a strike, I think. But how long is this? 8 minutes?
6:36. Undertaker does the diving lariat one. That's it.
Okay.
So there's two DDTs, a diving lariat, a knee lift, and a tombstone. That's five moves.
So. And that's all they needed to tell the story. That's all they needed. Nothing. They're not breaking their backs. They're not doing flips and high dives, which are great. You know, that's a different type of wrestling, and it's entertaining in its own way, and it has its own merits. And I'm not going to be like JR and bash on people jumping off the top rope. Yeah, of course. But these guys tell a entertaining, engaging story, and they don't throw anything in there that they don't need.
No, everything was necessary. I mean, there's no wasted movement or motion. Like you said, there's a DDT, so Jake hits a DDT, which I don't know at this point if anyone's ever gotten up from.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Heenan says that. So Jake DDTs him, and he doesn't really cover him immediately. He just kind of Taker sits up, and the crowd loses their mind. They just go absolute nuts. Because, again, I think that at this point, I don't know if anybody's ever kicked out of it or set up from it. You know, I think it's pretty much been a protected finisher, as all finishers were back then, except for the time Hogan popped up out of tombstone. But that's Hogan, brother.
Right.
So, we love Hulk Hogan. We just like to give him crap, too.
Of course.
But so then Jake hits another DDT. Not a transition move in there, in between there. Taker doesn't get any offense. He's another one. And Heenan says, no one's ever gotten up from two DDTs. Gorilla says, I've never seen anyone get up from one. And Heenan says, well, I rest my case. So good. Then he says, well, rest in peace after that. So
it's amazing how great these announcers can be when they don't have to talk about Twitter or talk about
Rocket League
and all this other
delicious fruity Skittles.
Yeah,
you're right.
They don't have someone producing them.
Right, yeah. Yeah, even if Vince was in their ear, he probably didn't care. This is Bobby Heenan. So, but I just wrote, I mean, that's great. I've never seen anyone get up from one. I've never seen anyone get up from two. I've never seen anyone get up from one. I rest my case. So that tells the story right there, you know. They're telling the story, you know.
Yeah.
No one's ever gotten up from that. And then, but for some reason, this is the only part that makes sense. Instead of trying to pin him, Jake goes out to tackle Paul Bearer.
Right. He definitely could have pinned him either time.
Yeah. So he could have pinned him, but anyway, he didn't. I'm not gonna. It led to the next section of the match,
right,
though, you know, and that's when what happens. Taker. Oh yeah, he goes out and he tombstones him right on the outside.
Tombstones him on the outside. Gorilla Monsoon says Tombstone City.
Yes, he does. I wrote that down too. So Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman,
yep,
can go back to WrestleMania 8 and see that the Undertaker started that.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Well,
forget Suplex City. Yeah.
Tombstone City.
No, no, the Tombstone. Oh, Tombstone City. Oh, no. This place has gone bananas. I told you somebody was going to get hurt. And it's Jake the Snake Roberts. He broke his neck, Monsoon. I bet he broke his neck.
And then, again, what a fun little nugget that, you know, Suplex City is, you know, Brock Lesnar, the first guy that ever beat him. It's just cool how this stuff all, you know, ties together eventually.
Yeah.
So, but I wrote that Tombstone missed again, quite a bit. But it's only
outside. Do it to the outside.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to protect the guy. So you don't want to sexy star him or anything. So anyway, but Jake, I wrote Jake looks dead. I wrote that down.
Yeah.
He looked dead.
Yeah.
He sold that move so well. So well.
Put it over strong, and he was essentially dead and buried at that point. This was his last WWF appearance it was his last match ever in I'm forgetting. Came back in 96, so 4 years until we would see him again. So this was him getting written out of the company and go to WCW for a hot minute. And
cup of coffee.
Yeah, cup of coffee.
Cup of
coal miner's glove match with Sting.
Oh,
our favorite.
Another classic.
Yeah. Great way to get rid of him, to give him his comeuppance, and great way to put over Undertaker strong, to give him a big signature victory again and continue the streak on strong. Obviously,
yep, this is 2-0.
Yeah, yeah. And again, they it wasn't a streak at that point. It just happened to get a strong win. But it was a big win, and the Undertaker is a big deal. He is something, and they're protecting him and doing something big with him. So it's cool to watch that.
Yeah, and he does the classic Undertaker pose. I mean, pin at the end. He does the arms folded, and the crowd loves it, man. They love that. They love Count to Three. And I wrote another quote that Heenan says, that I never thought I'd hear people cheering for this man.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's walking out of the ring, Gorilla says, how on earth are you going to stop this guy?
Yeah.
So again, they're just putting him over huge, man. Because like, WrestleMania, he's beaten, Jimmy Snuka? That's a legend. He's beaten Jake Snake. That's a legend. You know, he's won the title and lost it already to Hulk Hogan. So, you know, he's doing great. You know, they're still putting him over huge. Sometimes, you know, they let him run out of steam and, you know, forget what to do. But, hey, still going strong with him here. It's awesome.
It's cool to see, for sure. And, you know, like I say, he dropped out of the title picture for a little bit. But, yeah, definitely hasn't lost any steam. And I think turning babyface was a big big jump start to his career. It just feels right to see him in that role at this time. You know, he would go on to have some other heel runs later on. But it definitely felt right. It felt like the right time. And you mentioned earlier, you know, nowadays, do you think they would have turned Undertaker nowadays if that was happening?
No, I don't. I think they would have said, you know, forget it. We're going to stick with this and be hard headed about it. But I think he just had to back then. You know, I don't think they would have, like they do with John Cena or Roman Reigns. But you know, I don't think they would have given up on it.
Yeah.
But if they had to, it was organic. You know, I hate to use that word. Everybody uses that, but it was organic, man. The crowd loved it. They loved him. And it's like, you know, he closed the first chapter of his story with his heel run, his first initial debut. I feel that's the first chapter up till, you know, this Tuesday in Texas. This is chapter two when his face turned on Jake, and it's beginning a new chapter in the Undertaker story, because wrestling is basically a comic book. You know, it's all stories, and they never end, and everything's intertwined, and this is, you know, the next volume, I guess you will. That was volume one. This is volume two, you know, and that's kind of why we're even doing this, is to see where it all leads to, you know. And so, this is a great way for him to kickstart his face run and get a huge win. And like I said, Jake put him over strong. He looked dead after that Tombstone City. So, Jake's a big guy. I forgot how big Jake Snake is, man.
Yeah.
Watched him in the Undertaker. Like, Taker's a huge guy, but Jake Snake's big, too.
Yeah.
Also, he probably had like 4-inch lifts in his boots or something, too. But he
Snake skin boots.
He's big. But, I mean, when putting over Tombstone, the DDT is one of my favorite finishers of all time.
Absolutely, yeah.
Second to Jake the Snake, Raven, the even flow DDT, mm-hmm. and that was one of my favorites. I loved it. It's a transitional move nowadays. It gets one count or two count, and everybody does it.
Well, Bobby Roode's bringing it back, though.
Bobby Roode is bringing it back.
Yeah.
But even then, he usually has to wind up hitting two in a match. But I think some of the girls do one. I think Alexa Bliss does one, or Mickie James does one. But I wish you would go back to how simple that move was, you know. And it was protected, like I said, because when Undertaker kicked out or sat up,
it was a big deal.
Huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Huge deal. So, something to be said for the simplicity of the matches back then.
Yeah. So. I think you put it perfectly, talking about the closing of a chapter and the starting of a new one. That's what it feels like here. And, you know, unfortunately, this next chapter might get a little hard to read for the next couple episodes, next couple weeks. We're going up Heartbreak Hill as like Broken Skull Challenge, because the next few episodes we get two back-to-back Kamala matches followed
not
by two back-to-back Giant Gonzalez matches, and then a couple Yokozuna matches, which I think are a little bit better. The in-ring quality is not going to get any better, but storytelling is, it'll be fun to discuss those at least.
Oh yeah.
And then the Undertaker under Faker match will be coming up soon. But the next four are going to be a little rough to watch and sit through, but I think they'll be fun to talk about. And there's some, a lot of interesting stuff, a lot of milestones, in some of these matches. And sometimes the worst stuff is some of the most fun stuff to talk about.
sometimes the wrestler grabs some fun stuff. You know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah. We're sorry, guys, that are listening. We have to put through that. Well, we have to watch these matches, and we don't have to. We want to. You know, we want to watch these matches, and we want to talk about them because we don't want to skip over the ones that, you know, they're all important. That's the point of this whole thing. We're going through the Undertaker's pay-per-view matches, no matter what. No matter if it's Kamala twice in a row, Giant Gonzalez, or no matter if he's fighting, I don't know. Who are some of the later matches that were kind of terrible?
Oh,
Mark Henry in a casket at WrestleMania.
Muhammad Hassan.
Muhammad Hassan. The Dudley boys burying his dad.
I can't wait.
In cement. Yeah. So, yeah. It doesn't matter. You know, if it's five-star Shawn Michaels or if it's WrestleCrap.
Yep.
We're gonna review it.
We're going to do it.
All tells the story of The Undertaker.
That's right.
And it's going to be interesting. So.
Well, we appreciate you listening. If you want to follow along, watch SummerSlam 92. It's what we're getting up to next. Undertaker versus Kamala. It won't take you long to watch it.
Nope, about 3 minutes long.
We'll cover it in depth, in way too much depth, and more depth than anyone's ever covered it before, probably. And that'll be on the next episode. You can follow along, subscribe to us on iTunes so you'll know when that comes out. And, of course, follow us on Twitter at TalkingTaker. Follow me at Alex Dorio. Cannot follow the Twitterless Travis White, but send me a message and I'll pass it along to him. We'd love your feedback. We'd love to know what you thought of this match, of the Undertaker streak, what you thought of the Undertaker turning babyface, what your thoughts are on Jake the Snake Roberts, any of that stuff, man. If you also met Jake the Snake Roberts at Hooters in 1993, we will be your support group for that.
Or in 2014 when he was recovering.
Yeah.
You're more likely to meet him there.
Anytime.
Yeah.
Also, I want to encourage you to check out the Max Wrestling Podcast, especially episode number 131. I was a guest on there. The guys invited me over to discuss this past week's Raw and SmackDown. So I want to encourage you to check that out. It's at Max Wrestling UK on Twitter, and you can just search Max Wrestling Podcast on your favorite podcast listening service. I want to appreciate those guys for inviting me on. I had a blast talking about the past week in wrestling, so appreciate that. We'll put a link up to it on our Twitter page as well. So when you get done listening to this, check them out and subscribe to their podcast too.
We'd love to hear that. We appreciate you listening. It really means a lot to see people sharing it on Twitter and letting us know that you're listening to it. And we love to converse with people on there. I'll follow you back. I'll talk to you. Love talking about this. We just a couple wrestling fans. We love to talk about wrestling way too much. So we talked about it all the time on the phone. So we just decided to start recording some of our conversations and making it worthwhile. So maybe our wives won't nag us too much because we say we're working on an artistic project, you know, all that stuff.
Anybody wants to sponsor us, we'll be happy to do that.
Open to that, too.
We'll plug all of it.
100%.
Thanks everybody, for joining us. We really appreciate it. Again, keep it up. Share us with your friends. You know, let us know what we can do to improve it. Some of you guys have sent in matches you want us to review, and unfortunately, some of them aren't pay-per-view matches, so we won't be hitting them. But we will talk about some of those milestone matches that, you know, kind of feed into his pay-per-views and stuff like that. So we won't gloss over everything, but we will get to some of those real cool ones that either take place on Monday Night Raw or whatnot.
Yeah.
And,
I think we need to watch the first Monday Night Raw. He's in the main event of
he
that.
Is.
So we should talk about that when we get to the corresponding closest pay-per-view.
I guess that'll be Royal Rumble 93, probably.
Yeah.
He was there.
He was there, so. But he's that doesn't do anything.
Okay.
So probably
we'll
WrestleMania 93. Yeah.
After Survivor Series 92, we'll probably talk about it because that'll be the last match he has before that. So anyway.
All right.
Well, thanks everyone. Appreciate it. Straight shoot, brother.
Rest in peace.